Many people say that cruises are some of the most relaxing and luxurious places a person can go. The cruise I went on was very luxurious, but considering I almost died, I would not say it was very relaxing. I wasn't planning to go on vacation, let alone spend a few days on a cruise, but the opportunity came by itself. Richard, a man I met on Tinder, told me he was the captain of a cruise ship, and to my surprise, he didn't lie. After going out a few times with him, he told me that he wanted to celebrate my birthday on his cruise ship, and that he would have a room ready for me. The idea seemed pretty good to me, since I had never been on a cruise ship, and since it was going to be crowded, I knew it was a safe place. The day of the trip, I noticed that I was not listed on the cruise list, nor did I have a personal room. I found it a little strange and even uncomfortable, but I understood and accepted. Richard was very kind, and I felt comfortable with him. I always spend my birthdays surrounded by a lot of people, and I didn't consider that Richard would be working, so I would be alone on my birthday. Anyway, he told me that he would throw me a little birthday party in the room, and the next few days would be spent with family and friends, so this situation didn't bother me. I walked around the cruise ship before going to the room. Richard was probably already in it, getting things ready for my little party. On my way to his door through a long hallway, something strange happened. Two strange female figures appeared in front of me. They both looked at me angrily. Where had they come from? It didn't take long for my question to be answered, as one of them appeared in front of me in the blink of an eye, and with superhuman speed and violence, grabbed me by the hair and dragged me across the corridor away from Richard's door. Terrified, I ran as fast as I could. When I calmed down, I went to the captain's cabin, and somewhat timidly, I found Richard, who luckily was alone and still not in our room. I didn't dare tell him that I saw ghosts. He would probably think I was crazy. So I just told him that there were women near his room who tried to rob me. The man called with his communicator to the sub-captain, and with me, we ran to his room, but there was no one there.
I'm actually kind of surprised. Nobody usually steals here. All these people are very wealthy, and no one comes in without a ticket.
I know, it seems weird, but this woman was really scary. I didn't feel comfortable being here alone.
Oh, don't worry, I can take a break. I'm not the only one in charge of the boat. Come on, let's go into the room. I made sure to have everything ready for your birthday party.
Once we got there, I started to explore, a little scared, while Richard was looking for something in his closet. As I looked around the room, there were no birthday decorations or anything similar, just a nice room. Maybe he had a big present stashed in the closet. I glanced at the mirror, and with a muffled scream, I jumped back in fright. The two women were in the mirror. Both had deformed faces and stab wounds all over their bodies. They were both looking at me, but at the same time pointing at Richard. As I looked at him, I realized that he was holding something shiny that could only be seen in the reflection of the mirror. That wasn't a big birthday present. That was a knife. Suddenly, Richard began to walk in my direction, slowly, his face full of anticipation, and he couldn't hide his huge grin.
Happy birthday.
Richard, what are you doing with that knife?
You don't like surprises?
With an ear-to-ear smile. This isn't funny, Richard. I want to get out. The man had no problem with me knowing his intentions. I ran to the door in desperation, but it was locked. Richard locked it while I was distracted. The psychopath came running at full speed with his knife, and although I managed to dodge him, I fell and hit my head on the furniture. I was very dizzy, and Richard noticed. Knowing how helpless I was, the man got on all fours like an animal and started walking slowly towards me. I was about to die, and he was enjoying every second of the psychological torture he could give me. He was like a cat playing with a mouse before killing it. I tried to stand up, but I fell to the ground. I was losing blood from the blow. It was going to be impossible to escape or even defend myself. Without bothering to get up from the ground, Richard came towards me and started to run the knife across my body. grazing it without applying pressure. The knife was cold and sharp. I couldn't die there. I had to do something. I gathered all my energy, and the only thing I managed to do was hit him with a weak blow in the face. He not only didn't seem to be affected, he even seemed to enjoy the fact that I still had some fight left in me, happy and smiling. Richard raised the knife to stab me. I couldn't even close my eyes. I could only see the knife coming towards me. Suddenly, to both Richard's and my surprise, I flew away as if something had thrown me. The blow was so strong that the door opened with my back. It was as if something invisible with enormous force had grabbed me and thrown me against the door as hard as possible. My body was more sore than ever, but I hadn't hurt my head anymore. Finding new energy, I crawled as fast as I could, screaming and screaming for help. Blinded by anger, Richard also screamed and ran at me with his knife, but this time, he couldn't do anything to me. Some security guards nearby stopped him before he could rush towards me. Richard had been impulsive, and this time, he had been caught. As the men restrained Richard, I began to lose consciousness. The last thing I saw before I closed my eyes were two women in his room, staring at me. Soon after, I woke in the hospital. The police officer told me that Richard had been arrested for attempted murder, but soon after the truth came out, Richard was convicted of murder. The victims, two young women seduced and killed by Richard in his room, just like he tried to do with me. When I saw the photos of the women, I recognized them immediately. They were the ghosts that were with me on the boat. They never tried to harm me. They just wanted to get me away from that room. Even after they died, they didn't want me to suffer as they did. They didn't want my life to end up in the hands of the psychopath. I celebrated my birthday a few weeks later, this time surrounded by family and friends. Since that day, I am much more distrustful of everyone. You never know that behind a man who seemed generous, kind, and quiet, you could find a monster.
When I was in school, I was a mischievous kid. My friend Eric and I were always punished by different teachers for our behavior. Imagine the prankster of your school. Yeah, me and Eric were those kids. We made the teacher's blood boil almost every day. Multiple times our parents were called by the principal to complain about us too, but to no avail. Eric and I were quite good at our studies, so our parents turned a blind eye to our mischief. However, as we grew older, our pranks became more and more elaborate. Now that I look back at it, I really feel bad for all the teachers and staff members we tormented. However, today I'm going to share a horror story with you. A prank gone horribly wrong. Back then, Eric and I were notorious, but also curious kids. We always did some amazing science projects and won our school a lot of prizes. Probably our intellect was the only reason we were never suspended or expelled from school. It was our ninth grade and we were newly introduced to the science lab. We enjoyed cutting open frogs and even performed some basic science experiments with great ease. But this time, we were supposed to perform a difficult experiment where you mix water with acid. Eric and I were very eager to perform this experiment. However, the teacher had instructed us to do it slowly and cautiously. She demonstrated how to do it, and instead of paying attention, Eric and I were busy inspecting the tools in the lab. The moment when we were asked to perform the experiment, Eric was the most excited and hyper of us. We just grabbed the two test tubes and poured the acid into the water, when in reality, we had to pour the water into the acid very slowly. Our teacher noticed this and ran towards us. But before she could stop Eric, the exothermic reaction had already taken place, and the splash of hot liquid landed on the teacher standing before us. Eric drops the test tubes in an attempt to save his hands, but the hot liquid falls on his shirt, too. This incident took place 2 months before Eric's birthday. The teacher was so severely burned that she was immediately hospitalized. This was the first time our pranks had hurt someone so badly. The principal called our parents and we were suspended for a week. A week later, when we came back, we got the news that the teacher was struggling to recover and would never return to school. We felt very guilty for what we had done. But unfortunately, our teenage selves had not yet learned our lesson. We continued with our pranks and troubling our classmates and teachers. Eric had a very bad habit. He loved to steal test tubes. Every time we went to the science lab, he stole a couple of test tubes. The teachers always wondered why the number of test tubes kept dropping. I never told the teachers that it was Eric who was stealing them. He loved to plant different plants in the test tubes at home. He was also a plant lover. On the day of his birthday, Eric's parents had decided to throw a surprise party for him. That day, our new science teacher, who wasn't familiar with our pranks, put me and Eric in charge of cleaning the apparatus in our science lab. Eric thought that this would be a great time to steal a lot of test tubes. I told him that it was a bad idea, but Eric brushed me off and told me that he was going to steal a lot of them anyway, after we were done. I wasn't so mature back then, so I didn't see all the things that could go wrong. I only wish I had. By the end of free period, Eric and I, along with a few other students who were appointed to clean the lab instruments, almost finished our work. As Eric wanted to execute his plan, we asked those students to return to the next lecture before us. We told them that we would lock up the lab and return the keys to the teacher before joining them. Also, it was my duty to take Eric straight home after school for the surprise birthday party. As per the plan, once the other kids left, Eric stuffed his pant pockets with test tubes. He asked me to steal some too, but I refused. We somehow managed to hide in the men's washroom during the last lecture instead of returning to the class as we should have. The school was over soon, and Eric and I started walking towards his house. Many of our friends were going to attend the party, and most probably went to Eric's home after school. While we were walking to his house, he still had all the test tubes in his pockets. I asked him to walk carefully multiple times, and he did listen to me. The moment we reached his home, he opened the door with his keys and switched on the lights. Suddenly, a big group of around 30 people, including me, shouted, "Surprise!" Eric lost his balance, stumbled on the carpet, and fell. To everyone's shock, he was sitting in a pool of blood, while his mom carried the birthday cake from the kitchen. This time, all the guests were surprised and didn't understand anything. I rushed to Eric and yelled at the people to call an ambulance. All the people snapped out of their trance, and soon everyone knew what had happened. The test tubes had shattered in his pockets when he fell, and all the broken glass had pierced his thighs and ass, and you know what. He was hospitalized immediately. All the guests gathered to celebrate his birthday party were at the hospital waiting for the doctor to treat Eric. His mother was a crying mess. The doctors extracted all the glass pieces, took them 3 hours to treat Eric, and told all the people gathered in the waiting room that he was fine. We celebrated his birthday in the hospital room that year, and after that, Eric and I never pulled any pranks again. Also, when his parents informed the school about the incident and that Eric would be on sick leave, the science teacher and the staff finally caught the test tube thief. That was probably the worst birthday party ever. And even today, whenever I call Eric to wish him happy birthday, I still tease him about the incident.
I met my husband, Brad, while working on a project in the States. It was one of those love-at-first-sight situations, and before we knew it, we were married. I am a European, so it took me a while to settle in the States. But what made me love the States is the number of different places me and my husband could go camping. He too, like me, loves trekking and camping. We often go to many trails near our home, but for his 30th birthday, I planned a 4-day trip to another state. This trip was mainly a trekking trip to an offbeat trekking trail. When I told Brad about my plans, he was thrilled and couldn't think or talk about anything other than our trekking trip for the rest of the week. My plan was simple. We would leave on a Friday, start the trek on Saturday, celebrate his birthday in the woods on the Saturday, and head back home on the following Monday. Brad always preferred nature to high-end restaurants, so spending his birthday walking through the woods was like his pipe dream. As the work week came to an end, we packed up our trekking gear. Now, being a European who has just been in the States for over a year, I admit I am still learning the way of life here. This also means I have been to 3 states apart from the one I live in. My husband, however, has seen most of the country and trekked a lot, too. But as this trip was a gift from me to him, I did not let him plan anything nor pay for anything. I wanted this to be a new experience for him. The first day of trekking was awesome. We hiked over a mountain, had lunch by a brook, and even clicked pictures under big trees and by small ponds along the way. We even saw a glimpse of a rare species of deer. It was the most romantic and fun thing we had done in a long while, given our hectic work life. By the time the sun began to set, Brad and I found a good piece of land, a clearing of sorts, to set up our camp for the night. A small river ran nearby, so we had plenty of water. We pitched our tents, made some food for ourselves, and ate as we watched the sun finally dip behind the mountains. Once the sun set, it was pitch black. Although we had head torches and other lights, we preferred to stay inside our tent. In such times, we usually sleep by 7, as we have an early day ahead. But I wanted to stay up till midnight to wish my husband the happiest birthday. I had packed some cupcakes to celebrate the day, as there was no way I could get an actual cake out here. Brad had no clue about this and insisted we go to bed. But I kept him awake somehow. Finally, the clock struck 11:45, and Brad was napping beside me. I snuck out the cakes, lit a tiny candle above it, and woke him singing "Happy Birthday to You." Brad was not expecting this, and almost teared up at our intimate birthday celebration. It was 12:05, and we were munching on the delicious cupcakes. Suddenly, we heard rustling in a bush nearby, too close to our tent. It made us uncomfortable, but we ignored it, thinking it may be an animal. But as the minutes passed, the rustling continued, and it was getting closer to the tent. In such situations, Brad is pretty calm, as he has experienced such situations before. According to him, it's usually a curious wild animal attracted to our unfamiliar scent. He asked me to go to bed, but for some reason, I just couldn't sleep. My sixth sense told me this was no wild animal. Brad also is an expert in animal and bird sounds. He can usually guess the animal or bird just by its call. So, when Brad's eyes grew wide and his forehead scrunched in worry, I knew something was wrong. "What happened, Brad? What is it?"
"Did you hear that sound?"
"I did. What about it?" "It was a high-pitched bird call of sorts."
"Do you know which bird that is?"
"I don't, as bird calls are usually your thing." I tried to lighten the moment with the funny comment, but it only made Brad worry more.
"Yes, it's a bird call. But this bird doesn't belong to this region. At least, not in this season, and not at night."
"What do you mean? I do not understand."
"That means it was man-made."
Okay, now it made a lot of sense. Usually, in such situations, if it's a fellow hiker, they usually approach you in a friendly manner and directly. If there are people out there communicating using bird call, they are most definitely not friendly. So, what do we do now? Instead of answering me, Brad just sat there, silently listening, and sure enough, there were more similar bird calls. Then the rustling continued, and this time, we could hear distinct footsteps.
"Maria, grab your small sack, and we need to leave."
"Okay, but what's going on?"
"No time to explain, just let's get going."
For the next 5 minutes, we grabbed as much stuff as we thought might be needed, put our shoes back on, and ran outside. We had a dim headlight guiding us. I still had no clue what was going on, but Brad was worried and a bit scared, which got me scared in turn. We could hear the rustling following us, and it seemed like an animal was following us. We almost started running, and we could hear grunts and low growls, but this time it was coming from all around us. Brad froze, and so did I, close behind him. Before I could ask anything, Brad pointed right ahead of us. There, a few feet away, was a pale white man standing in front of us. He was at least 7 feet tall and had a big mouth like a piranha. He got on all fours and ran towards us. Brad held my hand tight, and we ran towards the river, as at night the only way to get out of the forest was by following the river. We could not navigate our way in the dark otherwise. The man was getting very close to us, and Brad and I were running as fast as we could. There were rocks, branches, and twigs in our way, but we were somehow avoiding them all and running. We never carried a firearm while trekking, so we had nothing to defend ourselves. The man almost caught my ankle and pulled me with him, but somehow my husband held me close to him, and we finally made it into the river. The humanoid creature did not follow us into the river, but was walking parallel to us on the banks. When Brad moved his head torch towards the other bank of the river, we saw the most shocking scene of our life. More than a dozen other such creatures were waiting for us on the other bank. So instead of avoiding the water, we started walking through the knee-deep water. Brad had clutched my hand tight, and we were making our way in pitch darkness only with the help of the dim headlight. We could sometimes see one of the creatures on the bank, and their hissing, grunting, and growling were constant. Even the freakishly erring bird calls were ever present. It was around 3:30, and we must have walked in the river for several miles. We both were very exhausted. That's when, in the distance right between the river, on an elevated wooden platform, we saw a small cabin. It seemed abandoned. Brad and I hurried towards it and managed to get into it. The creatures were still all around us, but we could do nothing. All exhausted, we decided to take a nap for a while, even though we knew the situation was dire. When I woke up, the sun had already risen, but Brad wasn't there beside me. I got out of the cabin and saw him bathing in the river water below. In the distance, we could see the highway. Brad smiled at me, and I felt at ease after an exhausting night. Brad got into the cabin and hugged me. "What was that, Brad?"
"Do you know the name of this mountain?"
"No."
"Darling, you took me to the most haunted trail in the state, if not the entire country. This mountain is called the Miner's Mountain, and in the early 1900s, the mountain collapsed due to extensive mining, killing a lot of miners. Many people who had trekked this trail before had similar experiences. Your lovely birthday surprise almost killed us, sweetheart."
I was dumbfounded. I had nothing to say. The next morning, on Brad's birthday, we followed the river and got to the highway and hitchhiked in a truck back home. This was the most traumatic birthday we had ever experienced. Have any of you been to the Miner's Mountain?